Welcome to Roguecast, the official podcast of Rogues Gallery on Round Rock, where we talk about games, comics, and other stuff on our pop cultural radar. I'm Randy.
I'm Nick.
This is Dave.
And let's go to the show for this week. All right, we're going to start off with news for the week for the store, and we're coming up on the end of October, so we've got Wizard World will be on October 30th and 31st.
Right.
And at the same time, up on Saturday, October 31st, we'll have our Halloween Comics Fest, where we'll have a bunch of free comics and that kind of thing.
Right. I think Nick is going to be the Impresario.
Impresario.
Who doesn't like free comics? So come out, grab some good horror books, and...
I feel like I've talked this up to a lot of people, so Nick, you may be inundated with people.
You might.
And I think you guys will be inundated with people at Wizard World.
I did just post up a thing on our website about Wizard World that we're going to have some bargain comics bins, which people always like. So if you're going to be down there, we'll have bargain comic bins. We're also doing a thing where you get a raffle ticket to get a custom action figure by Nick.
Oh, that's right.
That's true.
So if you spend some money down at Wizard World, you might win an action figure by Nick.
That's pretty cool.
Then moving on into November, we're getting into holidays here. So November 10th is our current scheduled day for Reading with Rogues. That our book of the month is Top 10, which is Alan Moore's superhero multidimensional story. It's $25 trade. You get 10% or you get 15% off. Or if you have a rogue card, you get 25% off.
Yep.
We're doing Book of the Month regardless. We may or may not do Reading with Rogues. Last month we had a little bit of a downturn just because of all the other stuff going on.
Right. No, I think people were just – it was just one of those things. Lots of things hit at once for people.
We know the end of the year is one of those times where –
So for both November and December, we are going to be doing a we're putting up an event on Facebook. And this is a good one where if you do want to come – go and say you're coming and definitely let us know
and then do it.
Because if it's if we get like, you know, four or five people coming, then we'll definitely do it. If there's not a lot of people, then we'll probably just do Book of the Month for the month.
I will say Top 10 is so good that you should absolutely sign on and do it.
Yes. It's a really fun book. Lots to discuss. We're gonna do Sushinini as our place to meet this month.
Yeah.
So and then on Saturday, November 21st, we'll be running a tournament of or a tournament and demo of the new card game Epic, which is the guys who do Star Realms. It's their fantasy version, basically. Mm-hmm. It's got a lot in common with Magic the Gathering, except that it's not a collectible card game. It is a buy one box, you get everything card game. The entry price to play is $5. And for that, you'll get a 30-card deck that you'll play. You'll play three rounds. You'll get some bonus cards. If you win, you'll get extra bonus cards. Mm-hmm. And regardless, you get to keep your 30-card deck. So you'll have an epic deck to play from there on.
That sounds super fun.
There's more details on the website and soon to be on Facebook. But come on out for that. I'm hoping to play in that. It'll be a fun tournament. We'll keep mentioning that as we get closer to it. All right. On to news of the week, which
before
is...
Before you go on,
yes.
Randy. I was just going to mention, this is another card holder benefit is about to occur. I'm running my Dread RPG this coming Sunday. It's full, but it's a reminder that this kind of cool stuff is going to be going on all the time.
Yep.
In fact, we have some cool stuff already planned for just the next month or two that was not even part of the original list of awesomeness.
That's true.
And by the way, I'm hyped for the Dread game. That's why I mentioned it. I got it all planned out. It's going to be cool.
Cool. Also, always a good reminder that the board game library is in full swing. You can Rogue Card, you can borrow from our board game library, try stuff out.
Yeah, we have several people taking advantage of that, as they should.
Yeah, and there's some good games back here, and people seem to be enjoying it. So if you have a Rogue Card, take advantage of that library, and if you don't, get a Rogue Card.
Yeah.
All right, news for the week, which is heavy on the TV stuff and movie stuff. But I'm going to start with the comic news that we have, which is that a lot of people were disappointed that Sensational Comics with Wonder Woman was being canceled.
Right.
It's DC's digital first sort of Wonder Woman anthology. There's been a lot of stories in there.
Did you say Sensational? It's Sensation, right?
Sensation, you're right. Right. Yeah. But that is ending to make way for a new digital first series called Legend of Wonder Woman.
Right.
That is also going to be, I think it is actually a period piece. And it is written by Renee DeLiz, who is the editor of the Womanthologies from IDW. So
right, like an indie collection by women creators. Right?
Yeah, yeah. So I can't remember if this is an anthology-like Sensation or if it is a new series, but either way, new Wonder Woman series coming, so there are still going to be two Wonder Woman series going.
If what I remember is right, it's going to focus on her younger days when she was like on Paradise Island still. Like,
right, okay.
Sort of her early adventures and training before she came over to our world. I think.
Okay.
Before Steve Trevor.
Don't quote me on that, but before he ruined her.
All right. Moving on to TV news. Why the Last Man is in development at TV, finally. which is where it belongs.
Is it actually in development or fake in development?
It is. Well, it's been stuck in development hell for years as a movie.
But this is the sort of the movement we've seen. It's got a actual, you know,
got some people associated with it.
So no, the network is currently looking for a director and writer, and FX declined to comment. So it's still in that near rumor stage, but FX doing One Last Man sounds about right. The only other person, the only people would be better would be HBO,
right? Or AMC possibly.
Or AMC, yeah.
But I think FX could be a good fit for it.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. And TV is definitely a good fit
for
it.
For those who haven't read Why the Last Man, it has sort of an apocalyptic road picture vibe. But it's a gender politicking thing because all of the men die in the world because of some weird event, except for one.
Yep. And his monkey.
That seems like right, and he's because he's a magician dude. That seems like I feel like this story could play pretty well. Have lots of relevance to debates going on today, and the thing is, it was also it had Vaughn's trademark humor, sometimes very dark humor, and you know a likable ensemble of characters floating in and out of it. So it's not like it's not morose. It has dark turns, but it's not a morose apocalypse.
Right,
so it's not Walking Dead.
Yeah. Right,
it's more like a sort of dystopian road trip.
I think it'll work perfectly on FX.
I do too. Speaking of FX, the weirder news that came out was that the X-Men are doing two shows, or they're developing two shows.
And this is going to be set in the same movie-verse as the X-Men movie-verse.
Right. So over at Fox, they're doing Hellfire, which is going to center on the Hellfire Club from First Class. Described as a young special agent who learns they're power-hungry. Woman with extraordinary abilities is working with a clandestine society of millionaires to take over the world. So very much the plot of First Class, but without the nuclear apocalypse stuff.
And without Sebastian
Shaw. I'm trying to think. In First Class, though, they were fighting the Hellfire Club, right?
What do you mean they were fighting the Hellfire Club?
Well, I'm trying to think what was happening in First Class. Didn't they infiltrate the Hellfire Club or something at some point?
Yeah, but Sebastian Shaw and Frost were both running the Hellfire
Club. Right, they were the bad guys the piece. This is a show that's about them, though?
No, this is about a special agent infiltrating the world, the Hellfire Club.
I gotcha.
Yeah. It basically sounds like, you know, Moira, they made Moira sort of an FBI special agent.
Right.
It'll be that kind of thing. And maybe it will be Moira. Who knows?
Infiltrating does imply that there's going to be sort of a lot of time spent amongst the sort of bad mutants.
Sure.
So I wonder if there'll probably be some mutants that are sort of on the edge in the Hellfire Club that I would bet there will be supporting characters that you'll be like, this one's not so bad. Why does he have to go down to?
This one's going to be 24 producers, Evan Katz and Manny Coto. And Star Trek Beyond scribes Patrick McKay and J.D. Payne.
I don't know what Star Trek Beyond
is. The next Star Trek movie.
Oh, right.
So that's – and then, of course, they also involved are Lauren Shuler Donner, Brian Singer, Simon Kinberg, and Jeff Loeb, all the people who were –
Yeah, the movie folks.
And then weirder is that FX is developing Legion, which is a story of David Haller, who in the comics is a young mutant with schizophrenia and has psychic powers and multiple personalities.
Sort of weird reality warping type stuff, sort of.
And he's the son of Xavier and Gabriel Haller, who's an Israeli woman that he has met and fell in love with. It's a weird one.
Yeah, that's a bit of a weird call. Both these shows sort of like, you know, I could see how that the Hellfire Club one sort of has like, you know, 24 type, could have 24 type action and infiltration or even alias resemblances.
Yeah.
This one, I feel like building it around sort of a Disturbed, presumably. You know, I mean, they may change up the character of Legion hugely, but otherwise, to me, it sounds like they're building a sort of bad boy kind of dangerous mutant.
If you do it in a certain way, I mean, you're basically the main character is built in with his own supporting cast. Because what it is,
they're all personalities.
It's all different personalities, and it's not just like it's different genders, it's different types, it's all sorts of.
Was that his thing?
Yeah.
It is.
That's not schizophrenia, that's multiple personalities.
Yeah, they just call it schizophrenia.
He has multiple personality, and each personality has a different ability.
Well, no, I believe he's multiple personality and schizophrenic.
I thought that was like, what's her name from the Doom Patrol who had the different abilities with a different personality?
No, Legion did that first.
Oh, really? I didn't think Legion had that. Okay.
Yeah. Legion had many personalities, one of which was like an Islamic terrorist, one of which was a girl.
Yeah.
And he had different personalities. Kind of
You know, I can see the possibilities there.
Most importantly, it's being developed by Fargo showrunner Noah Hawley.
Right.
Fargo is my favorite show on TV, and I watch a lot of TV.
Yep.
And Fargo is one of those shows that should have been unadaptable. It shouldn't have worked, and it does. It's great.
Oh, fantastic.
So that alone is what gets me interested in this. But the big news around this, of course, was as soon as this got announced, there was a bunch of rumors flying around that, oh, well, Marvel's getting FF back.
Right. This was something that had been theorized months ago in a sort of hopeful way, like we knew that they wanted to make some X-Men TV shows. Yep. And
they needed Marvel's permission.
Oh, yeah, maybe if they give FF or something like that back to Marvel, Marvel will let them do the TV shows, and it's a win-win for everybody.
Well, and I assume that's what happened. And so then there were all these rumors, and I'm like, oh, we're gonna get confirmation. This is definitely what happened. And then we got confirmation that that is not what happened.
Right.
This has been in development forever.
Yeah. The Fantastic Four rights remain at Marvel, remain at Fox, sadly.
Did they have to get Marvel's permission to
That's how I understand it. They had to negotiate something from them,
yeah. That's the case, and we think it was just like money or something.
I think it's probably just money.
And Jeff Loeb's attached to these, so...
Yeah, so they have some say in it, but...
Exactly.
But it's a bummer, because, really, this is probably the best leverage they ever had to get Fantastic Four back, and they didn't get to use it.
Yep. I can still see how bringing the FF in, even at this late game in the Marvel Universe, you could always have them make a really awesome splash.
Yeah, like, but the more movies we get, the harder it's going to be to introduce them.
Right.
And also, it's not so much Fantastic Four. It's not that important. What we want is Doom. And Galactus. Yeah. And Silver Surfer. All that stuff.
Yeah.
And we're not going to have it for Infinity War, and that's a bummer.
For me, it's all about the ever-loving blue-eyed thing.
Yeah, having the thing would be nice, too. But then it'll wind up being the Avengers, just like every other character that has been the Avengers.
That's actually true.
So there's that. All right, on to movies. And first of all, we got confirmation that Mark Ruffalo's Hulk is going to be in Thor Ragnarok.
Yep.
That's kind of weird.
I've been hearing rumors also that this is going to be like a dark, really dark story and like pretty big, I think.
Yeah.
This is the one that's called Ragnarok, right?
Yeah.
Imply big, and, you know, if you're going to be taking on like the end of the world ending giants and stuff, assuming it is that Ragnarok and not like the beginnings of it or something like that, you know, that unlike Bond villain plans, this one essentially will go into operation.
Right. Well,
you can sort of see the threads already. I mean, they've shown Searcher's fire dimension in the second one.
Right. Searcher being the big fire giant from Ragnarok.
But the thing about the Hulk being makes sense is that in Age of Ultron, Hulk is very much like vanishes. And where's a good place for the Hulk to vanish? Asgard. It would make a lot of sense if he basically goes to Asgard to get away from everybody.
Well, if Thor sort of gets him and takes him to Asgard.
Yeah.
And
he's much less dangerous in Asgard.
Yeah, because there's other very dangerous.
He's just another troll there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Pretty much. And if they can introduce maybe Beta Ray Bill.
All I want is Beta Ray Bill. That's what I want confirmation of. Beta Ray Bill.
You know, obviously they can do a fair number of heroes, but you do got to be careful. Thor and Hulk could handle all the screen time themselves, no doubt.
Yep.
So I like Beta Ray Bill, but I kind of like him to have shown up in such a way that it's not like Ragnarok is occurring at the same time, because he's kind of got his own story. Like he's essentially a movie in and of himself. He's the guy who beats Thor, then challenges him to combat, and you know.
Yeah, but even that, the story involves Surtur and the upcoming Ragnarok.
But that was all just prelude stuff. It was like when that first showed up, Surtur was pretty much off screen the whole time. It was just his demons and stuff.
Yeah, but Surtur's demons were involved. I mean, it makes a lot of sense.
Right. It's just that I feel like if that had been, say, Thor 2, I would do it like Beta Ray Bill and set up for this, and then I do Ragnarok, and it's Thor and Beta Ray Bill teaming up.
See, I'm not sure Beta Ray Bill's enough of a big story for a movie. There's no arc there.
There's no villain. He had a thing with Sif.
So Beta Ray Bill would be your villain? That's weird.
No, he's not the villain, but he is. I mean, in that story, he sort of was for Thor, but he also kind of took over his main
character. Yeah, but I mean,
anyway, my point is, I wouldn't adapt it directly.
No, I'm just saying, if you do Beta Ray Bill in a Thor 2, he's kind of a villain in an arc.
Yeah.
So if you do him in Ragnarok, that just makes him part of the arc. I don't know.
The thing, what I'm trying to figure out is in I suppose if Ragnarok threatens other alien worlds, I'm just trying to figure out how they'll pull him in and introduce him and, you know, get him on the side.
I can see the cold opening being his race being destroyed.
Right.
Or, yeah. And basically him escaping with...
you know, his race did not get destroyed. They got largely destroyed, but they escaped in a bunch of sleeper ships. That's why he had to get Thor to help him, or that's why he wanted Thor's hammer was to go save him.
Yeah, but no, what Nick's saying is the sort of the devastation that leads them to flee could be the opening.
Right. What was his ship's name?
Scuttlebutt.
Yep. Probably won't use that.
No, they probably won't. Although, the Asgardians are sort of space aliens, so it actually makes more sense in the cinematic universe than it did in the comics.
True.
To bring in all the space stuff.
I mean, you know, he is kind of a slightly quirky alien. The very name Beta Ray Bill suggests a little bit of silliness.
Yep.
And so I could see them running with it. It's not like Marvel has shown themselves to be afraid to embrace a little bit of the kind of straight up comic book stuff.
Yeah, that's my only downside with the Hulk being in Thor Ragnarok is I think it makes less room for Beta Ray Bill.
Yeah.
And I want Beta Ray Bill in Thor Ragnarok. But I really like Mark Ruffalo's Hulk. I'm glad we're going to get to see more of him outside of just Avengers. So.
What I was sort of getting at like a little ways back was that just the visual of him taking on frost giants, fire giants, and whatever else they're going to throw in there, the Midgard serpent, whoever. All the big world enders are essentially giant creatures.
Yeah.
So Hulk finding them just makes a complete sense.
Yeah. All right. Now, of course, there's a big movie trailer release that everybody's talking about, and we're going to cover that. And that movie, of course, is Hail Caesar from the Coen brothers.
Yes.
Honestly,
it is a fantastic trailer.
It's a great trailer.
It's a period piece set in, what is it, the 50s?
50s Hollywood, I would say, yeah.
I did not rewatch it when y'all just now rewatched it, but... It's a sort of an epic in that sort of biblical Ben-Hur.
Yeah, they're making style. Coming Call Hail Caesar, and then their star, played by George Clooney, gets kidnapped.
And there may or may not be some implied something that people from the future have somehow done this.
Well, that's what they're called. They're called the future.
Right.
I think that's...
But there was something that seemed to suggest like it actually was, but
no.
Probably,
I think it's just their name.
Probably not, but I don't know.
Anyway, it looks screwball and road trippy in the same way that sort of Raising Arizona and Oh Brother, Where Art Thou? And
Oh Brother, Where Art Thou? Took its name from a screwball comedy from like the 30s. It was like that was the movie within the movie.
Yeah,
from there.
Yeah.
I'm gonna blank on the name of this movie, but it had Veronica Lake and I forget who the lead guy was. But anyway, it was also kind of a crazy road picture sort of thing.
Yeah.
That informs a lot of their sensibilities.
Yeah.
I mean, just the cast that
the cast is amazing.
Able to sort of string together is fairly amazing.
So the cast, the notable, the big one is probably George Clooney.
But these are all people that have worked with him before.
Right.
Josh
all of
Brolin,
their,
Scarlett Johansson.
Yeah, so some on the more on the side of character actors, some that are veering into star territory, but most of them awesome character actors.
Thanos, Black Widow.
Right.
Yeah, no, it's it looks really good, and we will post the trailer along with our show notes. The other trailer that you might have heard about is, of course, Star Wars Force Awakens.
Yeah.
Oh, I thought we were going to talk about Star Wars the video game trailer.
Oh, we'll talk about that, too.
Oh, okay.
We talked about that first. Yeah, there was a great trailer for Star Wars Battlefront.
Or it was an ad.
Yeah, it's an ad. It's an ad. And yeah, it's plays on nostalgia.
The first person I saw post that was Jason Murphy, and he said something like, "Yes, this is shamelessly manipulative, and yes, I just watched it like three times."
Yeah,
or something like that.
Yeah, it's a couple of guys who's working in an office, remembering how he and his buddy when he was a kid were super Star Wars geeks and fans.
And he looks at like a battered old R2-D2 toy,
yeah.
Which if you grew up in like the 70s or 80s, you probably had one of these things.
Yeah.
And then you see these flashbacks when he was a kid, and he and his friend are pretending to lightsaber fight with flashlights.
Yep, dressing up as Yoda and Darth Vader, I think, for Halloween.
Yeah. And of course, all you got to do is like drop that Star Wars music in there, and it's like tugging at the heartstrings and everything.
Yep, and then it's a little ad for Battlefront, which is basically the hey, go play with all your friends who you play Star Wars with online when this drops in November.
Yeah. Right. So the big cool thing I forget that just remembered that happens in the ad is like he's in his office and an X-wing literally like comes hovering outside his window and it's his buddy and he's like, come on.
Yeah, and he throws the chair through the window. It's such a great sort of Apple-esque breaking through. The monotony of and jumps onto the X-wing.
Right.
And, yeah.
They go blazing off and then it actually cuts, of course, to in-game footage. Where you can fly X-wings and all this other stuff. It
reminded me a lot of the Call of Duty or Black Ops
Yeah, the bromance ones. Yeah,
yeah, or with all the like Hollywood normal stars. People.
Yeah, yeah.
It was very well done. And it makes you want to go play the dang game.
And it's specifically a PlayStation app, which I think is interesting, because the game's going to be released on multiple formats. But PlayStation is the one that sort of does all this branded advertising with it. I think exclusives have gotten to be harder, but I think that some games get the right to do sort of the advertising for it.
Are there going
to
be exclusives for this game?
Yeah, I was going to say, I didn't even notice anything about that.
No, there's no. It's simultaneous release with Xbox One and PS4 and Steam. It's everywhere. But everybody we know is going to be playing on PS4.
It's true. If you want to play with on PS4 with us?
Yeah,
let's take on Hoth.
We need to figure out how to do the like group thing that they just introduced on PlayStation Network and set up a Rogues Gallery group or something.
That'd be cool.
Because it's like a 20-person, it's 40-person. Yeah, it's 20 on 20. We could probably make that happen.
I'm sure we could. And it's not
I know of like
Hoth.
10.
It's going to be another. They're going to do other big ones.
Yeah, there's other big ones. Yeah.
What is this actual? What is this thing?
Star Wars? What Battlefront or the
whatever this thing?
There's some kind of group thing you can set up like.
Is the idea that you control the whole battlefield? Or
like, well, yeah, if you can get a group of 40 friends, you know everybody playing.
Right,
yeah.
Right.
Which would be super cool.
You can take like your own server space, or you can create your own. Because
then you'd know who was killing you all the time.
Yeah, and you wouldn't feel like a random person who shot me from across the battlefield that has a couple
random
X's.
12-year-old has been playing for
has
days.
X's,
yeah.
X's noobs.
Yeah.
I'm like, it's that SOB Jason Murphy.
Yeah.
I'd be like,
exactly.
Oh my god, Jason, stop killing me.
Yeah, exactly. That's all I want. That's all I want.
Yeah, I
want
to know the person who's shooting me in the back.
It seems fair. I am super excited. After playing the beta, and did you get, you played a little bit, right?
The beta.
We talked about it.
I kind of got my fill of what it had to offer.
Me too,
sort of like
but
what
I
you did.
But I can't wait for more. If the beta was still running, I'd probably jump in on it every now and then and play it.
I sucked at it, but I'm still going to throw down $60.
Yeah, yeah, my pre-order's already in. I'm very excited for this to come out. So, all right. So let's talk about Star Wars Force Awakens.
And then the big trailer,
All right, so I don't know where everybody else is out there on tickets, but thanks to heroic efforts of Nick... We have tickets for the Rogues Gallery crew.
Apparently, when you announce that you're going to be releasing tickets on Monday, it breaks the internet.
Yeah, well, Star Wars tickets.
Yeah, Star Wars tickets. It breaks the internet because not only was our local theater, the Draft House,
their
site was destroyed.
They had a page set up for Star Wars tickets,
and it was basically randomly working. Some people got their tickets, but most people did not.
Just look at the draw kind of stuff.
I think I got to the. By how many tickets you wanted, and then I got to the select your seats, and it would always crash.
Yeah.
So I live right across the street from one, thankfully, so I was able to walk over, or drive over. And
I heard, like, Fandango and all the other sites were crashing.
Fandango was down,
But they had a line that basically took up the entire lobby.
That is so old school.
Yeah, I feel like, I'm sorry you had to stand in it, Nick. But I feel like if somebody didn't stand in line for Star Wars, it wouldn't be a Star Wars movie.
Oh, I walked in and I kind of was just like, oh. And then one of the guys in line was like, you know what this is for? I'm like, of course I do. I knew exactly what this is for. Yeah. And all the other people were, you know, running around sort of trying to figure out the best way to do the line. And I'm like,
wow.
Yeah, but I bet that they, like, you know...
I don't think they were expecting it.
Right,
yeah.
I bet they expected their computer system to get a little overloaded and stuff like that, but it would ultimately deal with it over time.
Yeah.
But they probably weren't expecting people to come in person in those numbers.
Well, no.
And I think people only came in because everybody in line was complaining that their site was dead.
Yeah.
And they wanted their tickets.
Yeah.
And I will say this. Alamo is doing a billion showings of this thing.
Yeah.
They're doing 5 in the morning shows. The woman who was helping me out was like, well, if you have some really adventurous friends, we have a showing at 4:30 in the morning.
Oh my god.
And I'm like, I have kind of, because...
No, that's the worst possible time.
Yeah, they're also doing the 17-hour...
that's insane.
Showing all of the Star Wars films.
That's insane. I understand the idea of marathoning.
But the notion
but
of
you
seeing...
You'd have to watch all 3 prequels.
Yeah...
If they were doing some kind of half marathon where they were showing the original trilogy and then Force Awakens.
Well, basically, what you do is
then
you buy the tickets.
And then you don't show up until Star.
You do the machete cut. You come and at least, you know, watch the.
You can't do the machete cut.
Can't do the machete cut because it shows in different order.
You're supposed to, like, watch one of the prequels in between Star Wars, between Empire Strikes Back and Return of the
King. Yeah, the machete order is Star Wars, Empire. Then the 2 prequels, then Return of the Jedi.
You don't even watch episode 1.
And skips Phantom Menace,
Okay, well, you couldn't do that. But I think more or less I was like, oh, it's kind of fun. I could actually see, you know, 4, 5, and 6 on the screen.
Yeah.
And I haven't seen that in forever.
Yep. Yeah. No, it's tempting to, like, buy the ticket and just skip the prequels and come in starting at 4, but I don't think that's
going to
happen.
Yeah, I've never quite had the marathoning mentality, so, you know, I like Lord of the Rings, but I wouldn't go to any of those mega Lord of the Rings screenings or anything.
The Draft House did one that I was considering, because they were doing the sort of the food all throughout.
Yeah,
sort of
their
14-course meal with the movies, and I'm like, oh, that could be kind of fun.
Still too much for me.
But what they're also doing is Mondo is coming in. They're doing an exclusive glass for the Draft
House. Which you and I got.
You and I got because we want the glass.
Yes.
They're also doing a magazine specific to Star Wars.
Which I'm sure will be good because they're birth movies, birth death movies, birth movies death.
Yeah, birth movies death.
Is a really good magazine.
Yeah. But, and I'm sure it's cool. It's an exclusive thing that they're doing for the Draft House. I'm sure if it looks cool, we can get one there. Because I said they'd have a ton of those.
Yeah.
But the glasses were exclusive.
Yeah.
We should talk about the trailer.
And now the trailer.
Yeah. So we've got ours. We're ready for a Thursday night viewing.
We are.
And the trailer went up.
The trailer was awesome.
And so first let's talk trailer blockade.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Because we discussed this a while back, maybe about earlier, like last year, maybe, or earlier this year.
Something like that. It's been going a while.
We activated the trailer blockade, which was the notion that we were not going to watch all the trailers for all the various movies we wanted to see.
Right. If we knew we were going to go see it, in general, we were going to try and avoid trailers. Yeah. I believe you and I were pretty hardcore on this. Nick, you were kind of like, eh, whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I slipped a little bit. I mean, like, I watched a trailer for Age of Ultron. And,
yeah, sure.
But I've watched no trailers for Spectre, for example.
Right, and I haven't particularly either, but so what is happening is I've found myself that it hasn't particularly been adding to the experience for me. So maybe some of those things, maybe and this may actually come down to my forgetfulness, that I can watch a trailer and it's not going to super stick with me.
Yeah.
As long as I don't watch it a ton, and because I don't have TV and stuff, and I you know, don't tend to get exposed to a lot of ads, I'm not inundated with commercials the way some folks are. So, you know, I'm just seeing this trailer like maybe once or twice.
Yeah.
Although, to be fair, this new Star Wars one that hit the other day, I watched it like 3 times.
Yeah, I've watched it 3 times too. But I'm generally sticking with the trailer blockade. I have found that it enhances my enjoyment. Like, I don't see all the scenes ahead of time.
Uh-huh.
But my memory is slightly better than yours.
Uh-huh.
So that is probably part of it. And also, I do watch a fair amount of TV, and so I'll see the little TV trailers, and I try to sort of distract myself and not watch them, but I do see them.
Right.
So I am sticking with a modified trailer blockade.
Yeah.
But I definitely did not plan to blockade Star Wars. I watched it as soon as it came out.
I was thinking about it, but I hadn't actually even considered trailer blockade that closely until last night, and I was like, I kind of want to see this. People seem to be saying it's good. I'm going to give it a shot. I do think I'll probably hold off on things like on short-term stuff. Like, you know, I watch The Flash each week. I'm probably not going to watch the little thing that's for the episode hitting the following week.
Yeah.
I'll remember that.
Right.
And I'd rather, you know, get that surprise out of it.
Right.
But other than that, I kind of, you know, talking about trailers is fun. And so, my trailer blockade has definitely lessened.
Yeah. I thought this was a great trailer.
Yeah.
Okay. It definitely was effective. I mean, I definitely teared up a little bit at some of the stuff, especially Han Solo.
Like all of the movies, the trailers that they've done so far, it actually manages to do a lot to give you sort of emotional swells and sort of like a tone and an atmosphere a little bit. But very little plot is revealed.
Yeah, what's going on in the story is not. You can start speculating, and people are. Right. And that's the thing that I think all of us are avoiding is these minute-by-minute Zapruder film analyses of trailer.
Right. You mentioned Han Solo, and yeah, that was like, I think we were talking about this earlier, that since he's sort of like the big cynic of the first round of movies, he's like the, you know, hokey religions are no match for a good blaster guy.
Yeah.
So having him be the one who's kind of telling some unknown person, you know, it was all true, the Jedi, the dark side, everything happened.
Yeah.
And that also led me to speculate, and I don't know, you know, maybe that was just some cool narration for the for the trailer. Maybe it's in the movie. I assume it probably is.
Probably.
But I was half wondering, it's like, you know, in the 30 years since the fall of the Empire, or somewhat something of their fall, if there's been sort of like some kind of campaign from the remnants of the Empire to sort of whitewash what happened, you know, like, you know, Alderaan was an inside job kind of thing.
Yep.
And so that maybe, you know, the Legends of the Jedi Knight have faded, the rebellion might even have been, you know, tainted by Imperial propaganda and stuff like that, which They actually do touch on that a little bit in the Star Wars comic Shattered Empire that's just will conclude tomorrow or today, I guess.
As you're listening to this.
They touch on that just a little bit on how the Empire is dealing with the loss on Endor and everything. I lost my train of thought, but Nick? Let's go.
I thought it was a fantastic trailer. It set out what it needed to do, but it didn't give away any big things.
Yeah.
It felt like it was just sort of a tonal trailer.
But also did plant the lead, two essentially lead characters right squarely in front of us.
Yeah.
Right.
Who in previous trailers I was like, I don't know, but for all I know, these could be sort of supporting character type.
Yeah, now
people.
We sort of know who the leads are.
Okay, I know that she's one of the big guns, and I know this stormtrooper guy is one of the.
And I always assumed he was in a disguise, but it sounds like, my guess, just based on what they've seen, it looks like the Imperial. This is not Tatooine, by the way. I'm almost sure that this is another planet.
Nick, we were talking about that earlier. That it seems like everything is happening on Tatooine, and Randy says he doesn't.
I don't think it is. I think it's another, because they mention it on Battlefront. It's another world.
Okay,
that battle that's crashing the Star Destroyers and all that. I think this is a battle late in the Empire era.
When they were maybe cleaning up Empire.
Yeah, this is like a border system, and what it seems like is basically like all the galactic communications have fallen or something like that, and all the truth of what happened is gone. And for 30 years, these people, or 25 or whatever, these people have been living in this this world where they didn't know what happened, and then like this new Empire remnant springs up and is sort of trying to create a fiction of what the world is. And that's what I think is going to happen, is that they recruited this one kid, and you know, he's grown up being a stormtrooper, not knowing there was any other way.
Right.
And then he finds out that he's force sensitive, and Han and Chewie show up and tell him that it's all true and take him, you know, and show him the truth. And what's nice is that ties into sort of the original movies, in that the original movies were creating this whole world from whole cloth, and that's what made it so amazing.
Yeah.
Is like everything was new and everything was different, and you didn't have like.
You're saying that'll be his experience?
I think that's better than the prequels, where it was an empire that basically there was all this politics and galactic blockades and all this kind of stuff that is boring.
It was a Republican decline.
Yeah, and that's more boring than an edgy frontier system,
right.
You know? So I think that it's a smart decision, if that's what they're doing, and I think it is. I was assuming that he was in a stormtrooper in disguise, you know, like he was just like Luke in the first movie, like
right.
He was wearing stormtrooper armor, but it sounds like he might have been a stormtrooper.
I think he is a stormtrooper.
Yeah.
Exactly what stormtroopers do in this brave new world, it's kind of hard to know.
Yeah.
There's definitely some glimpses in there of, you know, Millennium Falcon duking it out with some TIE fighters.
Yep.
Special effect looks fantastic, you know.
Yeah.
Everything looks very real. I mean, it doesn't look, you know, fake. The CGI.
Yeah.
It's particularly good CG.
I know Abrams
practical effects in there,
is using just tons
good.
Of practical effects, trying to do location shots and props and giving his actors the ability to interact with things instead of green screen.
Yeah.
And I think that is so much key, and it feels so much tonally like the original trilogy that I think just having that is going to set it apart from anything that the prequels did.
I wish they'd given Leia a little something more to do than just have one shot of her with Han in the trailer, but I'm sure that she's got more in the movie.
And we don't see or barely see Luke.
We see Luke in shadow, if that is in fact him with R2.
With his little...
And that led to all kinds of crazy conspiracy theories that Darth Revan was secretly Luke, and that was the big... But it's not.
But the new villain, you know, with Vader's mask, it was a very interesting scene and very sinister.
Someone who sort of... He's almost made him a religion.
Yeah, and that I thought was really cool, because that is an interesting way to
Sith is a religion.
Yeah, that's true.
But like, this is more like maybe like almost like a weird ancestor worship kind of thing, or you know, where like Vader himself is like a god.
Well, here's what I know. I've been trying to stay unhyped about all this. I've been trying to keep my distance. I'm super hyped for it. I'm super excited, and if it's no good, it's going to be as big a heartbreak as the prequels were.
It's one of those trifectas of things. It's not just the movie; it's the Battlefront experience.
Yeah.
It's the comics that Marvel is putting out.
Yeah.
It's all of these things that are sort of just like
Star Wars has always been a multimedia blitz,
reminding us, man, Star Wars is awesome.
They've grabbed hold of the nostalgic part of me that I thought I'd managed to kill, and it's still really there.
You're getting it not from just Battlefront; you're getting it from Disney Infinity,
and your kids
and Rebels. No, my kids don't care.
I thought Aaron had.
Aaron likes Star Wars, but has no desire to see the movie.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
But yeah,
that
right,
may change once everybody's talking about it.
Maybe. He likes playing stuff. He likes the interactivity. Right. He loves Star Wars Battlefront or Battle Commander or whatever it is on mm-hmm. iPad.
Yeah.
He does not do movies. They're boring. He doesn't like sitting through them.
It's interesting.
Yeah.
My hype level is actually still about where it was. Like, I've been pleased to see all these good trailers.
He puts on a good front, people.
But I'm not like, it won't crush me if it's not great. Now, here's the thing. I actually don't believe it has any chance of being as bad as the prequels.
No, I think that's unlikely.
I think Abrams will, his raw craftsmanship is better than aging Lucas's raw craftsmanship.
I agree.
I think he's, Abrams is good at packing an emotional punch in scenes. I think we're going to get that, and we've already, you know, been hinted at in the trailers. I mean, John Williams' score is amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah, they recur, you know, we hear several of the famous motifs in here.
Yeah.
This one also included even the romantic motif from mm-hmm. Empire Strikes Back.
Yep.
The Han and Leia stuff, yep. if I'm not mistaken. Along with, but they were, these themes were kind of weaving in and out kind of quietly in the background. It wasn't like a big, huge blockbuster in your face thing.
Right.
It did have this sort of sinister tone, but there's an interesting shot in it where, Our TIE fighter, our stormtrooper guy,
yeah.
he bumps into somebody when it looks like a bunch of X-Wing pilots are scrambling.
Yeah.
And I think he's wearing an X-Wing pilot uniform at the time. And, like, he exchanges a look with the guy, and I don't know if it was, like, the guy kind of patted him on the shoulder, like, you're one
yeah.
of us now
yeah.
or something. But that kind of looked like that, and it was like he, you know, almost like that Luke Han moment when Han tells him, like, may the Force be with you in A New Hope.
Right.
And so there was these scenes that hinted at emotion, although you don't know the context of it.
Right.
You know? And I thought it was a pretty ingenious for a trailer.
Yeah. All right, so we'll be back in just a few seconds to talk about comics for the week. We were talking comics for the week of Wednesday, October 21st, and the Marvel relaunch continues, and you're going to get a whole lot of that in our recommendations.
Yeah, I'm sorry to say the Marvel relaunch is pretty good,
yep.
and so Nick's Marvel whoredom continues, but we...
I had a point!
I'm sorry, Nick. but we'll also be, of course, jumping in.
Dave, why don't you start with the second issue that we all liked this week?
Sure.
This is another Dave is picking it, but we all would have picked it.
Right, yeah, and it's the same one that happened last time,
yep.
2 weeks ago.
Yep.
This is Amazing Spider-Man number 2. We all loved Amazing Spider-Man
yep.
number 1, which kicked off Peter Parker as sort of tech mogul.
Yep.
With a lot of neat twists and turns. He had new allies. He had some kind of cool little secrets going on. He was still Peter Parker and trying to run his business in a sort of more responsible way in his mind than Stark does
yeah.
or some other people do. And, you know, he took like a pay cut, right?
Mm-hmm.
He like was making like, what, 50K or something?
Yeah, yeah.
He's more about the people than sort of himself.
He's being responsible.
He
yep.
is.
And then it had all those cool backups in the back that previewed a lot of other good stuff happening, kicking off in the Spider-Verse.
Right.
So this issue is a regular-sized issue. And it's an aquatic adventure.
Yes. Now,
it's so
now,
cool.
We didn't want to say this in the last one, but Hobie Brown is like one of his Spider-Men, basically.
He is, yeah. And if you don't know who that is, it's the Prowler, an old enemy
yep.
of his who's periodically showed up as an ally.
Yeah, a reformed years. Thief, not unlike Ant-Man or
yeah.
one of those
guys. I really like the Prowler.
Yeah, me too.
And you know, honestly, that just comes down to good writers. I actually liked him as far back as the old Michelinie McFarlane run.
Yep,
he
yep.
was used in there, and
mm-hmm.
I liked him in that. And then I kind of like hadn't seen him for like 10 or 15 years, and
yep.
then suddenly like I see that he's well, he became a bigger thing. I was going to say, yeah, he was
yeah.
Miles Morales'
uncle
in, yep. in the Ultimate Universe. And but yeah, he's a buddy of his of Peter's now, and he is essentially acts as Spider-Man
yeah.
as his bodyguard when Peter and Spider-Man need to be in the same place, because yeah, it's kind of publicly known that Spider-Man's a bodyguard.
Yep.
So in this issue, it's essentially a cool partnership going on between them as
yep.
they go undersea tracking down some stolen tech from Peter that's taken by the terrorist organization Zodiac,
who are cooler here than they've been in a long
yeah,
time.
Yeah, yeah, and I got to say the artist Kamankoli.
Yeah,
that's how we say it.
Yep.
He's done some very fun redesigns on their costumes. So you know, this is their code names are the Zodiac signs. So it's like Libra, Cancer,
yeah.
Scorpio.
Cancer wears a crab on his head.
Yes, he does. But it
still
looks cool.
Cool.
It looks cool. And what I like about them is they're so friggin' comic booky.
Yeah,
you know, that is
apologies.
Yeah, those are not like, oh, they're kind of like, it's just like Al-Qaeda with like, you know, some uniforms that look like Cobra or something.
They're straight up villains.
These guys are based on the Zodiac. Yeah. That's ridiculous.
Yeah. I also, there's a great sort of buddy cop vibe going on with Hobie Spider-Man.
I was talking about this with Nick earlier. Spidey's so good as a solo character that I would not have guessed. I would have liked it so much as kind of a buddy.
It really works though.
And there's a lot of fun banter, including some of the guards for the Zodiac.
Yes, yeah.
But he has like, you know how he's got the spider mobile. This looks like sort of like an underwater spider craft kind of thing that it looks like a hydrofoil when it's on the. When it's on the surface of the water. But they go down, and he's got, you know, like this kind of underwater armor over the Spider-Man costume, and the two of them infiltrate, and I won't get too much into details, but it's a cool infiltration, and there's some neat twists and turns revealed about how they're dealing with the theft of the tech and how they're going to try and counter Zodiac.
I will say, the small thing that I loved was the bet.
Yeah, the bet. Early on, he bets him that he can't be silent, that he can't not banter. There's great dialogue banter between them. There's also, I love Peter Parker using more tech. It's one of these things where I wouldn't have thought it would work.
Right. I do, you know, like Peter Parker, the iconic Peter Parker, is a down on his luck kid who has a few neat tech items.
Yeah.
But
we're gonna see that in Spidey, I think.
Right, the one that flashes back to sort of year one.
But you allow him to evolve.
Yeah, you allow him to evolve, and you let him use tech, you know, basically kind of like Tony Stark, where he builds tech that he needs for a mission.
But he's still kind of, you know, he's still a little bit of a, not a screw-up, but you know, he's still a guy who trouble hit finds him.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's still a guy who tries to banter his way through it with a little bit of humor.
Yep.
He's still kind of the likable guy he always was. So I would, like you, I would not have guessed I would be so into this, but Slott knows Peter Parker and Spider-Man, and he's made it. He's the kind of guy who can do sort of a big change like this without making you feel like he's thumbing the nose at the past.
Yeah,
he's like, he still loves the past, and it's still part of the present.
Well, and he does some nice callbacks. One of the benefits of having a guy write a book for this long, he does some callbacks, some stuff from a long while back that he was writing.
Yeah,
that ties into the emotional stuff here, and you don't necessarily need to know what it is, but if you do, it's a nice Easter egg.
I did not know what it was, but I could tell that, you know, I picked up on the context or the basic importance of it without knowing that.
Also, this book is so much fun. As each of us was reading it, we were cracking up out loud.
Yep. Well, I also, you know, like, to me, things like an underwater infiltration of a bad guy's secret base in underwater spider armor.
Yeah.
That's just freaking cool.
Yeah, they don't do that much anymore. Everybody's too embarrassed to be superheroes.
Right, sometimes, that's why when I'll sometimes watch an animated show, and they're so visual with animation.
Yeah.
And then, so the art is such a big part of it. They know, and honestly, sometimes they know they have to sell toys and appeal to kids and stuff, that they think about the action sometimes a little bit better. And I'll say, oh man, you know, or with video games, they do the same thing. And I'll be like, I wish the comics thought about using their powers in cooler ways. And I feel like Slott's pulling that off.
Yeah, I agree. This is really great.
All right. What else you guys got, Nick?
I'm going to talk about another Marvel book. Shocker. This is a new number one. This is Uncanny Inhumans. Basically, it sort of picks up where the Uncanny Inhumans number zero left off, and which came out, what, about 6 months ago? Something in that ballpark.
Yeah. Is it the royal family, essentially? The main Inhumans?
This book is telling two different stories. Okay. One is about Black Bolt trying to find his son, and the other story is...
And I'm like, Black Bolt has a son.
Yeah, he has a son, apparently.
Okay.
He does have a son. And the other story is about Medusa sort of dealing with all of the new humans, as they're referring to. Basically, the Inhumans coming about now.
They're not calling them Inhumans?
They're calling them new humans.
She called them the new Inhumans. Anyway, yeah, got it.
And both are kind of very interesting stories, because Black Bolt's, he's up against Kang, who has his son. And seeing him sort of going through time with Triton, who's basically his best friend at this point, trying to gather his son is interesting, because I like Kang. I unabashedly like Kang. I like his purple and green outfit. And I wish more people used him, because he's a great villain.
Yeah, actually, I think, you know, you do have to be a little careful with him, just like with Doom, that you don't overuse him. Last time I saw him, though, who was the...
Last time I saw...
Who did the Young Avengers
stuff? It was Alan Heinberg.
Yeah. Olivier Coipel? He did...
No, that was Jim Chung.
Jim Chung. He did a fantastic rendition of Kang.
Yeah. And I think that was the last time I really saw Kang used.
It's probably 5 years ago or something.
That was longer than that.
Was it?
Yeah. I was like, I was buying comics.
It was a long while back.
I'm mixing up my various Young Avengers series, but anyway, yeah, sure.
Yeah, and the other story with Medusa is interesting in the same ways, because you sort of see the day-to-day life that she goes through. Gives a sort of new distinct take on the Inhumans, what they stand for. In a weird way, they feel very much like the X-Men did, and I know that that goes against the grain on some people because they don't want the Inhumans to replace them.
But that is the intent behind this, or at least that's what I've been led to understand, is that they are sort of meant to be the beleaguered superhumans, the guys who are the kind of weird ones that may be a little bit shunned. That's who they are.
Yeah. And there's also a guest appearance by an X-Men in here that I was not expecting. I completely missed him, and I'm not going to reveal who it is, but it makes sense for the story.
You
missed him
when you read through it? Or?
No, I didn't even see it in the solicits. I don't know if it was one of those things that...
I don't think they revealed in the solicits. I think that was
just... Secrets
is
good.
Yep.
Yeah, so I was very happy to see this character show up, and I actually just found myself really siding with Medusa. She's an interesting character, and... I like the way Charles Soule writes her, and
that's right. It's Charles Soule whose writing craft has been very notable to all of us lately.
And the art is by Steve McNiven, so I mean it looks gorgeous. Not yeah. as
collaborated with for the Death of Wolverine.
Yeah, maybe not as detailed as his work in
Civil War,
but it is very nice looking.
He's a good artist.
Yeah. As you can imagine, with a story focusing on Kang, there's a lot of time travel, and there's a cool rendition of Attilan back like 13,000 years ago, and sort of seeing it like the original Attilan was kind of cool. But yeah, I really enjoy it. There is a backup story that is also cool about some of the younger humans and sort
three
of,
stories. What?
Making their or dealing with their powers and sort of how they're coming to grips with it. So
did we mention the weird page thing?
There is a weird page thing. I don't know if it's in all of them. I hope, but it seems like it might be.
Two pages were transposed.
But in the backup story, there's two pages that are transposed. They should have been reversed, and
so
it
don't
would make much
you,
more sense.
You're not confused. Just read them and just go and read them in a weird order.
Yeah.
If this is indeed in all the issues, we'll see.
Yeah, and it's a backup, so.
It's a backup. It's not in the main story. But yeah, that is my pick. It was quite entertaining.
My pick is also a book that I've been reading a lot of. This is a relaunch of a book that I really enjoyed with a creative team I really enjoyed. It is The Astonishing Ant-Man number 1. Nick Spencer is the artist. Ramon Rosanas is the art, or Nick Spencer is the writer. Ramon Rosanas is the artist, and I think that's a new artist.
Yeah, I don't think
but he's got sort of a Steve Lieber looking, you know, vibe. It works pretty well with the book, and this picks up 8 months after the events of Ant-Man, the previous series. But it also goes right along with what Ant-Man had been doing. Spencer, of course, wrote the Captain America that we all liked last week.
Yep, that makes
headlines. Ant-Man is basically a guy who's working in Miami as a security consultant.
This is Scott Lang.
Scott Lang.
Yep, just sure.
And his buddy Grizzly is his best employee. 8 months later, they're starting to get a lot of clients, and basically he's sort of estranged from his daughter for reasons that are revealed in the issue.
It's a Spider-Man villain, Grizzly, right?
Yep. And then Darren Cross, or their version of Darren Cross, who is a villain of the first arc, is still the main villain. But the fun part of this is there's a guy who approaches him with this app that is used to wipe out superheroes. Like it's like Uber for supervillains, which is really fun and goofy. And that's sort of what Spencer does here. He does sort of the working class superhero and a little bit tongue in cheek, but also serious. And I really liked it. I thought it was a lot of fun. If you like the vibe of the Ant-Man movie, sort of that comedy meets superhero, I think you'll like the Ant-Man comic quite a bit. And I was very happy with it, and also just nice to see a couple of familiar faces, like say Whirlwind and Grizzly.
Oh, Whirlwind, an Avengers villain that I love.
This
for no
one,
reason.
This one is also a piece with things like
Green Costume,
Howard the Duck, and She-Hulk, and the sort of
books that walk on the border between drama and comedy.
Yeah, and also sort of more the workaday aspects of the Marvel Universe.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Sort of here's what guys do who don't just live in Avengers Mansion and go out in superhero.
You mean Avengers Tower, Randy?
Nope.
They don't have a mansion with no butler no more.
All right, and then in cheater picks this week, I'm picking Star Wars Shattered Empire number 4, which is the end of the prologue series that Greg Rucka has written that sort of bridges the gap between Return of the Jedi and The Force Awakens. It is mostly a Return of the Jedi epilogue focused on, we talked about this before, it's got the two parents who have a kid who we believe is one of the lead characters in Force Awakens.
One of them is a rebel pilot and one is like a rebel kind of commander.
Yeah, and this one focuses on the pilot. Each issue of this series has been really interesting because last issue was sort of Princess Leia focused. Before that we had one of those Lando, we have Han and Chewie.
And always sort of lensed through this husband and wife.
Yeah, through some people who view these people as sort of legends and heroes, not as people.
Right.
And then they get to interact with them as people. It's interesting. This one is Luke Skywalker. He goes on a mission. She's his pilot. I won't say much more than that, except that it's really cool, has some fun action, nice artwork by Marco Cicchetto, and fits in nice with the Star Wars nostalgia that's currently buzzing through my veins.
Yeah, I like the issue too. I read that just a little bit ago.
Nick, what is your cheater pick?
My cheater pick is Invincible Iron Man number 2.
Which, like the first one?
2 weeks ago, number 1 was my cheater pick.
By the way, just real quick question. Do we know how long they're going to be doing the bi-weekly thing?
They usually do it for like the first month or two.
I think it's only the first 2 issues of theirs, mostly.
Yeah, and then it goes to monthly. Essentially, it continues to be good. This is Tony interacting with Victor Von Doom.
Right.
And we get to see sort of more aspects of his armor show up, which is kind of cool. It also is him dealing with Madame Mask, Courtney cool. Whitmore. And there is an actual scene that, you know, Bendis writes really good scenes every once in a while. But there's a scene with how Tony deals with Courtney sort of in a more touching way than you'd expect. He doesn't want to...
Wait, I thought Madame Mask was Whitney Frost.
Or Whitney Frost, not Courtney Whitmore. Courtney Whitmore is a Stargirl from DC.
Yes.
Sorry, I was, yeah. Ballpark.
Whitney Frost.
Whitney Frost at ballpark.
It's Courtney Whitney.
It's Courtney Whitney. Yes, no. There is a scene with the two of them that I think is one of the better scenes he's written in quite a long time. And I just think David Marquez's artwork is gorgeous.
Yeah.
There's so much interesting things in here and sort of stuff alluding to what the Marvel Universe is now. So I'm really, really digging it.
Dave, what's your cheater pick?
My cheater pick is a graphic novel. It is the collected miniseries Wild's End, which I talked about in single issues several times. Sort of an anthropomorphic version of a War of the Worlds type story, where like a small English village is threatened by sort of like the first advance guard of like what looks like it could be an alien invasion. It's very much an ensemble book. Yeah, like I say, this is an anthropomorphic book, so you know some of the characters. One guy looks like a rabbit, one guy looks like a fox, and all that stuff. And you have a sort of a bunch of what I would guess I would call our sort of like turn of the century English character types. There's, you know, kind of a pickpocket guy. There's a kid. There's a female writer who's sort of like a secluded writer living out there, maybe like sort of almost like a proto-feminist. The lead character of sorts is a like retired naval officer who's kind of seen too much of war and is trying to put it behind him, but does know what to kind of do in sort of perilous situations. You know, there's the town drunk. There's the people from the council, the village council, that are kind of the high muckety mucks, and you see it lensed through them, and they find themselves sort of having to be unlikely allies at times as they're trying to figure out, A, what's going on? B, is there any chance that they can survive it? I liked this series, and I'm especially liking its follow-up miniseries that's going on right now, in which several of these characters are now like in sort of like a detainment camp, as like the British government sort of locks down the whole area to figure out, sort of in the wake of this, what happened, is there still a threat, and some of the little interstitials in here between each chapter, there's a text piece, like a journal or something like that, or in one case, a piece of science fiction written sort of like supposed to be in this era. And since the second one focuses on two sci-fi authors that that are called in to consult, I think that's probably, in retrospect, I realize that's probably a piece of fiction from one of them. It's supposed mm-hmm. to be, one of them is supposed to be kind of more of the serious sci-fi, maybe H.G. Wells guy, and one maybe more of a potboiler, Edgar Rice Burroughs type, and they don't have much respect for each other. But I'm really enjoying their interaction in the second series, and that reminded me how much I liked this first one. So, yeah, I'm recommending the collected edition. Jeff Lemire's quote on the front says, "It's really great."
Oh, well, there you go. All right, so also in my stack this week, I've got Ages of Atlas number 1, which is a one-shot from Secret Wars that is basically Spycraft. If you like the Ages of Atlas characters, or if you didn't know them at all, they're introduced here. It's a one-shot of sort of heroes rising against a fascist empire. It's a lot of fun. Phil Coulson's in it. It is written notably by Tom Taylor, who you might know from Injustice and from Superior Iron Man.
Yep.
Art by Steve Poog. And it was kind of a fun one-shot. Warren Ellis' new book for Marvel is Karnak, with art by, is it Jorge Zaffino? Yeah, Gerardo Zaffino. And it is a very Warren Ellis-y take on a martial artist philosopher dude.
He's one of the Inhumans.
He's one of the Inhumans. This is a very different take on him. Like I say, Warren Ellis always re-envisions, so...
Right, I read this and I thought it was well done. I'm not sure whether I can wrap my head around his spin on the character.
Yeah.
But it's kind of like Moon Knight, which a lot of people really like.
Yeah, I was
going
to say, if you liked Moon Knight, this is one to check out.
I would say it's worth checking out. I think it's well done.
There's the Back to the Future comic, written by Back to the Future screenwriter Bob Gale. It's got two stories, one of how Marty met Doc Brown, and one of Doc Brown in the 1940s being introduced to the Manhattan Project. Gail Simone has a new Vertigo book called Clean Room that seems to be about sort of possession and monsters and that kind of thing. Star Wars Darth Vader number 11, it continues to be great. 1872 number 4 is the end of that Secret Wars Western series. Shield number 11 brings in the pulp character Dominic Fortune for a mission. And then... The Fade Out, number 10, which is almost done with its run. This is the 50s noir that Brubaker and Phil have been doing. I continue to love this book, and this one's another great issue. Nick, what else is in your stack?
I have the second issue of the Rick Remender new series, Tokyo Ghost. First one sold really, really well for us.
Art is Sean Murphy?
It is art by Sean Murphy. This Blade Runner meets Akira meets some other things.
Drugs,
yes. The new issue of Beauty, the third issue of it, which I have not had a chance to read yet, but I'm loving that series.
Yep.
A new series, Cognetic, by James Tynion, who works with Scott Snyder on Batman quite a bit. And this one is sort of a... looks like people are getting their minds taken over and sort of a hive mind. It reminded me a lot of what Stephen King's books, The Cell, or Cell.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
So kind of got a horror riff to it. It's interesting.
It's a little three-issue apocalyptic thing. Their previous one was Mimetic, which was about a sloth meme taking over the world. It seems to be sort of, not a sequel, but maybe a thematic sequel.
Yes.
It sounds interesting. I need to check it out.
That is all that I have.
Randy, did you mention Usagi?
I did not.
I'm just going to mention that there is a new issue of Usagi Yojimbo this week. It is a one-shot storyline, so, you know... This is one of these long-running legendary comics, sort of action historical stuff
that everyone should read.
Samurai stuff, and this is a good single issue. It actually had kind of a neat backstory where something I had never heard of is there's a collector in this who follows like the aesthetic appreciation of rocks or stones, which does sound very Japanese to me. And there's this dangerous sort of mission with other collectors out to get it and sending, assassins.
And Usagi ain't having none of it.
And he ain't having none of it. But he's going to get involved no matter what.
Because he's Usagi.
And then, let's see, there's a new issue of Astro City, which is a one-shot dealing with the Australian hero Wolf Spider. It is a really fun issue that Wolf Spider is like a... sort of would fall into the shrinking hero thing. Yep. Ant-Man and the Atom and stuff like that. But with a sort of uniquely Australian twist with ties to a... cheesy 80s Australian action hero cartoon that he loved when he was a kid, with some of these characters being brought to life. But you also get his origin and backstory on it. I believe this character has been mentioned as far back as like the first issue of Astro City.
Yeah, Wolf Spider was mentioned early on.
His name.
Yep.
And so finally you can find out what his deal is, and I like him.
20 years later.
And then lastly, there's a collection this week out for speaking of the 80s and cheesy cartoons. There's a He-Man collection called He-Man and the Master of the Universe Mini Comic Collection. If you ever bought He-Man figures back in the 80s, you probably remember they came with a little tiny comic book, some of which had sort of better art, some of which had worse art, but they actually had some decent people on some of them, especially the earlier one. They actually had some pretty notable like fantasy-style art. a little bit more serious than the later ones would become. And this, like, compiles all of them. Like, for every single
fancy hardcover. Ever.
Yeah, it's a big old thick volume. It's shorter. But here it is. 68 comics are in here.
Yep.
Anyway, so if you are an 80s guy, Jeff Webb, if you're listening to this, or He-Man nostalgist, for sure this is going to be worth your time.
Finally, one other thing that is not a comic, and that is the Batmobile.
Oh my God.
The Batman Animated Series figures are ones that Nick and I have been buying pretty much relentlessly.
Yep.
Well, this week the new Batmobile comes out. It is scaled for those figures. You can put two figures in the cockpit. Cockpit slides open and closed just like in the animated series.
You have working seat belts.
It has working seat belts.
You know what's notable to me? It was bigger than even I expected it to be, and I knew it was going to seat two figures and not one, yep, like the old one. But I kind of like had a mental picture, and I was like, yeah, it's going to be kind of big. This thing is a behemoth.
It's 2 feet long.
It's 2 feet long. Yeah.
It has wheels that turn. The front wheels actually turn sideways, so you can, yep, drive it a little bit. If you put the batteries in, it's got lights in the back, the front, and the cockpit.
Yep.
This is super cool. It's $100.
It's not nothing.
But it
is. As I was looking at it, I was like, you get your $100.
It's super cool. So if you're an action figure guy or a Batman Animated Series guy and you're looking for something to splurge on, we do have some of those for the shelf. We don't know if they're still be around at Christmas time or not. We'll have to see.
Yeah, they might go fast.
This one, I think, will go fast, sort of like the Man Bat.
Yeah, yeah. But very cool. All right, we'll be back in just a few minutes to talk about some video games and comics and more TV and Halloween. Okay, so we have a potpourri of things to talk about. Potpourri?
We have a pope.
A pope.
We have a pope.
All right, so let's start with Nick. You want to update us on your Veronica Mars progress?
Actually, yeah. No, I don't think I've even mentioned this. I think I mentioned it to you, but we haven't.
Have we not talked about it?
No.
Oh, okay.
I thought we did talk about that you were watching.
I think we did. I think we talked about season one.
No, because we ran out of time last time. We have, then I'm sorry, but my memory has failed, but I think I'm right.
Well, given the third of the three of us, you have the strongest memory, it's probably accurate.
So, yeah. Nick, you're doing a Veronica Mars rewatch.
Yeah. No, watch, not rewatch.
Oh, okay.
No, watch, right?
Is it a rewatch? Oh, okay.
I've seen seasons one and two before.
Oh.
I have not seen season three, so I'm kind of looking forward to getting into that.
Oh, okay, okay.
But I kind of wanted to immerse myself in the entire, the whole story.
The oeuvre.
The oeuvre. I have not. This also might spur me to read the books that
Rob Thomas
has done.
I think he actually sort of laid out the books, and someone else writes them.
Yeah, somebody ghostwrote.
But they're solid. No, their names are on them.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, basically, Veronica Mars focuses on Veronica Mars, a young high school student who her father is a private investigator.
Yep.
Played by the amazing Enrico Colantoni.
Yep.
Dear God, he is so much fun in this
show. Great in this, yeah.
The
rapport fantastic
that those two characters have with one another, it yep feels very genuine, for one thing.
Yeah.
It feels like what, you know, the emotional connection between a father and daughter. They're great. And the supporting cast is really good, too. I mean, none of them I've known from other shows. I mean, I think they've probably gone on to do a few things, but
yeah,
I'd completely forgotten a lot of some smaller stories and some of the smaller characters that appear. Like, I'd completely forgotten about Duncan Cain. I know he was there.
Really?
But, yeah.
Duncan's kind of a major character.
He is a major character, and some major things happen to him in season two. The first season is all about sort of a death of Veronica's best friend.
Her best friend, Lily Kane.
Yep. Sort of Twin Peaks-ish a little bit. Yep. Not crazy or anything along those lines.
With an actual ending.
But it feels very sort of modern-day noir in a lot of respects.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just a fantastic story. It's a very tight story. There is an ending to it.
It's a great blend of sort of high school, because she's in high school and they're in this town called Neptune that's sort of a San Diego type thing where all the Hollywood stars live. So there's a strong class divide where one of her friends is head of a motorcycle gang, and her dad, she's sort of fallen into the lower class, but she used to be in high class because her dad was the sheriff before a scandal that sort of ended, you know, the scandal involving
but
her
she
investigation.
She has this reputation that brings everybody to her to figure out problems.
Yeah.
And I think that's a great sort of way to tell a story and
yeah
a way to really focus your character and give him sort of the end to every sort of thing. Of course, you know, she deals with you know, the love interests of, you know, Duncan Kane and Logan Eccles, which is sort of the kind of douchebag bad guy.
Yeah.
You know, it's just fun. The second season is not as great.
The first season is a great 22 episode. I think 22, maybe 24.
It's 22.
And it is a great series. Like, it beginning to end, even all the case of the week stuff is usually pretty good. Yeah. And so the second season had a high bar to clear. It didn't quite clear, but it's still good.
Yeah, its central focus is on a bus crash that kills probably around 6 or 7 kids. A
bunch of students, yeah.
And a bus driver and a teacher, journalism teacher.
Yeah.
And that is sort of its focus. And there's a few other things that were kind of stragglers from the first season, like who killed a biker during the finale and things like that. But that is its central focus, and Veronica was supposed to be on the bus, and she wasn't. Again, strong character performance throughout. I am just about close to finishing it. I think I'm on episode 18.
So. As I recall, the big finale gets a little convoluted, it also somewhat retconned season one a little bit, which is unfortunate.
Really? I don't remember that.
Maybe I'm wrong. I thought so. There's something that I thought that there was a revelation. I'm like, oh, but they already revealed that. I like the original reveal better.
But I really have come to really like these characters. Yeah. I mean, Veronica and then her sort of supporting cast of
Mac, her hacker friend,
her best friend
Wallace,
the kind of odd kid turned jock,
yeah,
as a star basketball player. They're just great people.
Yeah, it's got that sort of Rob Thomas is the creator of it, and he's got that sort of snappy dialogue and fun that just Joss Whedon has.
Yeah.
So a lot of this is in the dialogue and the characters.
And if you're liking iZombie right now, which is something that
it feels so much like iZombie.
Yeah, it feels like iZombie. So if you like that vibe, I would really say go watch the show. It's on Amazon Prime. Amazon Prime. And if you like that, I know there are books available. And then there was a movie,
mm-hmm.
which the movie's great.
I really like the movie. But don't watch the movie if you haven't watched the show. You won't like it.
No.
How many seasons did the show run?
3 seasons.
Yeah.
And I've heard mixed reviews about the third season.
Season 3 is extremely problematic, but it's not as good as season 2 even, but it has good stuff in it.
I kind of just am wanting to watch it just for the characters.
Yeah, yeah.
And more of
it's worth watching. I watched it all the way to the end, and a lot of people don't like the ending, but I think the ending is one of those perfect noir endings, so.
Okay. Well, I am very much enjoying it, and I think many more people should enjoy this show.
Dave, shifting gears, you have been playing a video game.
Yeah, I think this game came out, somewhere between 6 months and a year ago. I can't remember.
Longer than that.
I think it was like about a year.
Was it? Okay, I thought it was further back than that.
Well, I don't think so. This was, the game is Shadow of Mordor, which is the, essentially an Assassin's Creed knockoff with Lord of the Rings graphics and stuff.
Right.
But where people originally thought it was just going to be this throwaway knockoff, it turned out to be actually like a really good game. And it like got all kinds of accolades and stuff at the time. I'm playing it on the PS3, which from what I've gathered is something of a decidedly less polished version than the PS4 version.
Yeah.
Even not just graphically, but also that there's some game mechanics that have been a little bit, I guess dumbed down might be the good thing.
Okay.
So PS4 people might be like, oh, why didn't you play it on the PS4? I don't have a PS4 yet.
Not yet.
But I've been enjoying it. I kind of got over the, you know, I'm not too picky on graphics, honestly. Everything looks pretty good to me nowadays. I can see that it's not up to the standards of a PS4, but I like the Assassin's Creed games that I've played, and I like Lord of the Rings, so you put those things together, not too difficult to win for me.
Yeah.
But it is kind of weird. You wouldn't think Lord of the Rings is like a game of assassination, and it's not there's not an easy fit for it, but they kind of do what they did for,
Force Unleashed.
Starkiller, Vader's Apprentice. You are sort of forced into this situation. Your guy plays one of the Rangers, like Aragorn and stuff like that. But in the dramatic opening scene, his wife and kid are killed in this sort of ritual by some bad guys, and they bind like a Wraith spirit to him. Wraiths being the stuff like the Nazgul in the movies. And so you live somewhere between the real world and the Wraith world, which, you know, if you've played Batman or any of those games, you know how you can kind of go into like certain different vision modes.
Yeah.
So you can go into this sort of Wraith vision mode where your targets pop out against you and you can see all kinds of cool extra stuff.
And you sort of embark on a campaign of vengeance in Mordor against the people who did this. But you're also trying to uncover the mystery of what happened to you, like why they did this. Presumably there is some nefarious purpose behind it to, you know, aid Sauron. It's set right between the events of, like, The Hobbit and The Lord of the Rings. So Sauron is rising in power, but it's not quite, I think, at the events of the movies, right. Lord of the Rings movies.
Right, right.
Anyway, you get all kinds of badass sword play. You can, you know, do cool archery stuff, blow up campfires. There's just tons. At first there was actually a rather difficult learning curve as I was getting used to its open world. And I realized it would be better to go on the actual missions it has first. And the missions teach you the stuff if you sure go in the right order.
Yeah.
I felt like they should have emphasized that a little bit more. Because I was like, I'm just going to wander off in this direction. Oh my god, those guys beat the crap out of them. Most of your foes in this are orcs of various stripes. But there's some other monsters and spiders and, you know, trolls and you know, Lord of the Ringsy stuff.
Sure.
In it, it's got actually has a pretty strong story and some kind of fun lore in it that ties into events in the movies and the books. It's also got some dodgy lore in it.
Yeah,
it's a random example. Like everybody knows that if you're Lord of the Rings dork, that Saruman, the evil wizard, was the guy who made the Uruk-hai, the super orcs that are like the ones that can go by daylight and all that.
Yeah, right. Yeah,
there's Uruk-hai running around all over the place.
Sure,
like decades before those events, but. You know, it's an excuse to have tougher orcs. That's, you know.
Yeah.
The orcs themselves, there's kind of a neat subsystem in it where they have their own sort of system of trial by combat and rulership. And you periodically look in on it as you try and sort of work your way up to their higher-ups, which eventually, to include the people who tried to kill you, or did kill you, I guess. And they're like these super, they're essentially their mega bosses.
Yeah.
But there's also orc war chiefs below them. And, you know, you'll like go to like break out in like an orc stool pigeons that they're going to kill. And he'll give you some information that'll lead you to someone else. And you kind of work your way up the ladder and, you know, you instill this terror in them. And they, when you take down somebody, another orc sort of moves in to fill in, take his place. And, They must have some massive orc name generator, you know, it's like Tarlog the Cruel. Like, you know, they have special certain things that you can, like, find out more information, find out what their weaknesses and strengths are. Cause some of them are really tough. Some of them will block all your ranged attacks. And if you know that in advance, you're like, I'm going to try and lure this guy closer to that orc black powder and blow him up with that, and then I'll move in for the close combat kill. So
it's like a little blending of, like, Hitman as well. Yeah,
the combat is very fun in it. And, interestingly, if you die in it, unlike other games where it's just like, do you want to go back and continue at a checkpoint, you are considered to have died. It's just that your guy is like, it's sort of an immortal wraith and you're sort of reborn at these towers. But what happens is the orcs that defeated you become more powerful. So you got to be a little careful about that because they get tougher and tougher.
Yeah.
But overall, I've taken its measure, I've gotten pretty decent at it. I'm probably well over halfway through it and having a good time in spite of not being as flashy as the PS4 version. So that has been my video game indulgence.
All right. So I promised a few weeks back that I would finish going through some of the Valiant stuff since I got that big stack at Animal City Con.
Yep.
And I was going to just run down some of my favorites. I read almost everything. There is one trade and two hardcovers sitting that I have not read yet. But my my favorites that I read, and we're going to have these available for sale so you can try them out if you're interested. Weirdly, the Armor Hunters, which is an event book, it collects a 4-issue miniseries where the Exo-Manowar, which is this alien armor that has taken over a Visigoth, is sort of they're sort of the Superman of their world. He's got all the power and all that kind of stuff.
Right.
So this is these alien Armor Hunters come and they basically think that the Exo armors are an alien plague that will eventually destroy each planet. So they come to these planets and destroy the Exo-Manowar. So basically, they are they arrive and are faced immediately with the U.S. military and with a secretive United Nations organization that is sort of anti-alien, and they basically invade to wipe out Exo-Manowar, and Exo has to team up with this underground organization and some of their heroes to try and stop them. It's a really good, you know, heroes versus aliens story, and I liked it a lot. And
you know what I like about your description of it, though, is that it's like that's not a standard superhero plot.
No, it's more sci-fi.
Right, you know, the notion of aliens invading us to try and save us from, you know, from what they see as, like, you know, a threat But, you know, is this armor suit worn by a hero?
Yeah.
And we hope won't become a threat, I guess. And that's, that sounds like some kind of cool push-pull between who's in the right, too.
Mm-hmm. Next up is Shadow Man, which is written by Justin Jordan, who you might know from Spread and Luther Strode. This is a this is their magic stuff. Shadow Man is a character. He's based in New Orleans. He gets his power from a bloodline. Like his name is Jack Boniface, and his father was Shadow Man and disappeared when he was a young kid. And he's fighting these demons and that kind of stuff. He's got a protector or sort of a mentor who's a magician who also uses like guns that have. Very supernatural style, like
yeah.
carved in supernatural bullets and that kind of thing.
Uh-huh.
And his assistant, who's a younger woman, there's sort of flirtation going on, and they're basically dealing with this extra-dimensional demon invasion, and he's also trying to resist his legacy of being a Shadow Man, and this is his origin and all that kind of stuff. I really like this. It's got nice Patrick Surcher art. If you like sort of supernatural adventure, it was good for that.
I always liked Surcher.
Then there is Bloodshot, which is their sort of military guy. He's basically a Punisher type, except that he is filled with nanites, so that his body basically will always rebuild, even from almost nothing. He's got the healing factor that Wolverine's got. Right.
It's almost like what if Punisher had Wolverine's
abilities. But he is also controlled by this organization called Rising Spirit. That is, they keep wiping his memory and they give him false memories to motivate him. Like, you've got a family at home and you have to get back to him, even though none of these families are real.
This is one that I read and I really enjoyed.
And he's going after Harbingers. They're sort of their mutants.
Yeah.
And he's like the boogeyman to them because he's been hunting them down for so long, but he doesn't remember it. And he winds up allying himself with some renegade Harbingers to take down his original masters.
Man, it's pretty messed up, honestly. It's really a good story.
That's pretty fun. Unity is their team book, and it comes together when Toyo Harada, who is their most powerful psychic, think of sort of if Magneto was Professor X, basically.
Right.
And he wants to create this utopian future by any means necessary. And he puts together this team of Ninjak, who's a British special agent, Livewire, who's a Harbinger with like machine empathy powers, mm-hmm. and the Eternal Warrior, who's an immortal warrior. To take down Exo Manowar because he's dangerous and he's taken over this Eastern European country that used to be Visigoth territory. And
maybe those aliens were right to want to kill Exo Manowar.
Exo is definitely sort of a dangerous guy, but over the course of this, Exo winds up becoming an ally, and there are other villains, and it's a really interesting setup. I'm looking forward to reading the rest of these series, but this first four issue story is really fun. It is written by Matt Kint. Who you might know from Mind Management, I believe, yeah. over at Dark Horse. And then there's The Valiant, which is another team book, mm-hmm. which is written by Jeff Lemire, I believe.
It was Jeff Lemire.
And has art by Paulo Rivera.
It's quite the power.
And that is one that I think Dave has to read, hasn't had a chance to read yet. But that is probably my favorite thing I've read from them.
Yeah, I agree
it's
with
a
that.
Dark story. It's about the Eternal Enemy, who's basically this big, nasty... Swamp Thing-esque bad guy who every, 50 years comes around and kills the Geomancer, who's supposed to be the protector of the Earth. The Eternal Warrior is supposed to prevent this. He has never been able to. And the Eternal Enemy has risen again. There's a young woman who is the new Geomancer. And so basically, the Eternal Warrior goes out to try and defeat... He tries to gather all the new heroes, all these various heroes, to defeat the Eternal Villain. While he does this, he sends Bloodshot out to be the protector for this new Geomancer.
Uh-huh.
And it's a really fun story. It has a big shocker of an ending, which leads into Bloodshot Reborn, which is also by Jeff Lemire, has art by Miko Sayan and Raul Allen. And it's sort of a... It reminds me of the artwork that was on, say, Punisher Max.
Yeah.
Sort of more realistic and painty.
Yeah,
that's
really good.
Not to spoil too much, but Punisher or Bloodshot has lost his abilities in this. He's gotten some of his memories back, but he does not have his powers. And this is sort of about him deciding what he wants to do with his life when there's some serial killers running around that seem to have powers similar to his. It's very Punisher-esque. It's got a lot of psychological elements to it and is just really great sort of gritty crime horror stuff. It was my second favorite thing I read from them.
Mm-hmm.
Then there's Ivar Timewalker, which is a time travel story that's got a bit of a Doctor Who where... the third brother, there's Armstrong, who's sort of the drunken immortal brother, Eternal Warrior, and Ivar, who has time travel abilities. And he shows up at a woman who is about to invent time travel, and there's some kind of mysterious force hunting her to stop her from doing it, and they begin jumping through time, running away from these people trying to kill her.
The people who invent time travel are always going to get mixed up.
Always in trouble.
In an adventure.
And they, of course, wind up in Nazi times. There's a pirate ship adventure. Lots of fun stuff in that one. And like I say, if you like Doctor Who, this one feels a little Doctor Who adventure-y. Mm-hmm. Finally, there's Quantum and Woody, which I was suspicious of because I love the 90s incarnation of these this book. Yeah. And this is...
Was that Chris Priest book?
This is Christopher Priest. And this is a new creative team. It's James Asmus writing, who you may know is co-writing some Black Captain America and Black Widow, that kind of stuff. Artist by Tom Fowler, which is really nice, sort of cartoony-looking art. And this is a pair of adoptive brothers, the young white kid who's kind of obnoxious and the older black kid who's more serious. And they were raised as brothers, but they've sort of become estranged. This one comes back. Their father is killed. He's a scientist. They wind up bonded together and have these sort of energy powers. And they are dealing with all these conspiracy and elements that killed their father, which includes a villainous version of Thomas Edison. This is sort of goofy parody over the top with a lot of action sci-fi in it. It's a bit of Lethal Weapon if it were superheroes.
Is it set in the Valiant Universe?
It is set in the Valiant. Kind of a little bit set in the Valiant Universe, yeah.
Same way She-Hulk might be in the Marvel Universe or something.
Yes, yeah.
The goat? All three of those people show up in the Valiant.
Yeah, they've all been in the Valiant, yeah. It's a lot of fun. If you're looking for something a little lighter, a little funner, Quantum and Woody is definitely the one to look at.
Is Tom Fowler the artist who was on Mysterious to Unfathomable?
Yes, yes.
Man, he is a talented
artist. He's a great artist. They've got a lot of good talent on the Valiant books, and that's not everything they gave me. Those are my favorites. There's other stuff I'll talk about at some point, but that's a good selection of sort of their best stuff. I like that they're all different premises. Mm-hmm. They're all superhero, but they're all sort of a different vibe of superhero.
Right, right. The same way one might say the Matrix is a superhero thing, but
it's not really,
yeah.
Well, except they have costumes and code names and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But yeah, I really like this, and those are the ones that I'll you know, like I say, we'll have those for sale, and you should check them out. All their trades, by the way, are the first ones are all $10 trades.
Nice. Yeah.
So you get a good sampling of Valiant for pretty cheap.
Mm-hmm.
Finally, we're running a little low on time, so we're just going to real quick run through some Halloween stuff that we do.
Yep.
Just some movies. I sent out a question to I'm not a big Halloween guy.
Right, you're not a huge horror fan.
I'm not a huge horror fan. But around Halloween, I was like, oh, maybe I'll catch up on some horror movies. And I sent out a list like, hey guys, what stuff that's on streaming that I should watch?
And I believe that you, like me, have like been like, I have not had as much time to do this as I wanted to.
I've watched one movie. I watched Devil.
Right. one that I think Nick and I probably would both have recommended to you.
Yep.
That was the... M. Night Shyamalan written, but not directed. Movie, yeah. About people trapped in an elevator, one of whom may be the devil.
Yep. And I liked it, but didn't love it. It's interesting.
I'm rewatching it right now, so I can see where I stand when all is said and done.
But I got a bunch of suggestions, and I'm just going to run through them real quick. On Netflix, and I've watched none of these yet, recommendations include Babadook, The Taking of Deborah Logan.
Oh, that's one I need to see. I've heard good stuff on that.
Pontypool, which is one that Dave recommended to me. The Pact, which I don't know much. I don't know much about any of these. I'm trying to stay sort of unspoiled.
Yeah.
Monsters, which I know is sort of a like District 9, but sort of monsters instead of aliens kind of thing.
Right, right.
More indie.
Is that the guy who like directed Godzilla?
I think it is. Yes, it's Gareth Edwards, the guy who's doing Rogue One, I believe.
I was not wild about that.
Godzilla or Monsters?
Either of them, but Monsters is what I meant in this case.
House of the Devil and The Guest.
Yep.
On Amazon Prime, there's one called Inside and one called You're Next that Nick has recommended to me.
Yeah, You're Next is a lot of fun.
And knowing your sensibilities, I would say House of the Devil, while I've seen, while interesting, it's deliberately paced, kind of like a slow 70s movie.
So probably not going to be my thing. Yeah. And then finally, on my list of things that I have left to borrow or rent or something, Triangle, which I think is a Bermuda Triangle thing.
It is not.
Oh, okay.
But it does... Well, I mean, I'm trying to remember... But it's an unusual thing. It's somewhere between horror and suspense, and I recommend it.
It was recommended to me by like three people. Yep. So
check out Triangle. I think you might like it.
More in the comedy vein, but What We Do in the Shadows, which of course Dave has talked about.
Yep, that's the new Flight of the Conchords guys.
The Innkeepers, which I don't know anything about.
Same as the guys who House of the Devil, okay. So I would give it that somewhat of the same cautionary note, but I haven't seen it.
I like The Innkeepers quite a bit. Okay. It's a nice little story.
That's on my to-watch list, too, though, because I haven't seen it. I just assumed it'd be kind of slow-paced.
It's slow-paced. That's just his vibe. That's what he does.
And finally on my list is The Conjuring, which I know you guys have both seen and like.
Yep, good movie, James Wan.
Dave, what else is on your list?
These are movies, some of which I've seen. I have not seen as many as I'd like, and usually I kind of catch some better ones, but it seems like this year I've seen a few more crappy ones. Well, but a few legends. The best thing I saw recently was The Exorcist. I rewatched that with some friends, and very much enjoyed it. A lot of subtle stuff that I forget in there, just great bits of acting and...
Well, it's a weirdly paced film.
Yeah.
In the sense that it doesn't end quite exactly where you think it's going to end.
Right.
It's got sort of that abruptness to it that I think is a little jarring, but it made sense for the 70s that it was...
Well, it feels like a drama about a mother and her troubled daughter, and, you know, like, when they first approach the priest about doing an exorcism, they're like, she's gone through all this medical stuff.
Yeah.
Like, great chunk of the movie, and they make it really unpleasant. Then the doctors are the ones who recommend the exorcist.
Yeah.
And they even say, they're like, we don't believe in this, but we think that the psychological problems that your daughter is experiencing might, if she thinks that an exorcist cures her, it may actually help her. So they're just like, just do it as a placebo, basically, as a last resort. And she goes and she talks to the young priest who's at the center of it, and who's like a really intense and great actor, even though that was his one and only movie he made. He was he's a director.
Yeah.
And he's like, you're going to have to go back a few hundred years. The Catholic Church, he's like, doesn't do exorcisms anymore. Nobody's trained in it. If they were even going to do it, they'd have to have somebody who's not me, sanction it and investigate it first. And it's only when he actually sees her daughter that he decides to sort of do it off the books. Yeah. You know? But it's got, it still surprises and shocks after all these years, I find.
Yeah, it's got one of those, undeniably great scores. The music is creepy. Yeah.
It's rather subtle, though. Actually, they only use music a few times in it.
Man, and I was going to say, the performances are fantastic.
Well, Max von Sydow in it, this is something I forget. It won for for makeup, not just on the possessed girl, but... He looks like this, like, broken 80-year-old dude. Yeah, he was, like, 40 when he did it. I can't believe it. It's one of those makeup jobs where you don't look and think, that's pretty good old-age makeup. You just look and say, oh, they got an 80-year-old.
Yeah.
I mean, it's really, it's stunning how good it is. It's better than any I've ever seen.
But I forget who plays the mom. She puts in a great performance as well.
What's interesting about that is that she, normally, horror movies, they tend to focus on sort of, middle-class white people or upper-middle-class white people, sort of standard. She's super rich. She's, like, a well-known actress who's going to, like, have lunch with, like, the president later in the week. Or as part of a group.
I only have these distinct memories because Kaylee and I just watched it probably a couple of months ago.
It's just, it's interesting that it challenges notions. It doesn't follow horror conventions. It doesn't have a lot of jump scares and things. Anyway, that's the big one, and so I just wanted to touch on that. But I'm going to see Crimson Peak later this week, though, at theaters.
I caught.
And you liked it?
I did.
Del Toro.
Yeah, I would say if you like Guillermo del Toro, you're going to like Crimson Peak. If you don't, you probably are going to be a little unsatisfied.
I've talked about this before, I think. I like his protégés more than him, so I like The Orphanage, and I like Mama. But I didn't really like Pan's Labyrinth, and I still haven't seen Devil's Backbone with a lot of people.
If I had to guess, I'm going to guess that Dave is not going to like Crimson
Peak. I think there are going to be things that Dave's going to like about it.
Right. Yeah. Weirdly, I know exactly what I don't like about him at this point and sort of what to expect. So yeah. We'll see if I like it better going in that way. I saw two bad movies. Maggie was the Arnold Schwarzenegger zombie movie, and there is a germ of a good idea in there.
Yeah.
But execution
was boring, and he was honestly not up for it. I heard his performance was notable. It's really not. He tries, but the idea of dealing with this is a zombie world where it's almost like getting a terminal illness.
Yeah.
And it's the last few weeks of his daughter as after she's been bitten. A good idea, just you could skip it though. Unfriended. Now, this actually I didn't think was a bad movie. This is the one that's all told through computer screens where there's Skype, social media, even iTunes and stuff like that. And I actually, I they're so dedicated to it that I can't help but admire it. And I did enjoy the interaction throughout there. Something, you know, a girl who killed herself, may have been pushed to it by one of the people on this Skype chat. She's essentially possessing the computers and is telling, you know, very quickly convinces them that if they turn it off, she is going to kill them. And then a drama unfolds that's a little bit almost Hitchcockian as far as, like, as secrets are slowly revealed.
Yeah.
The ending is weak. The ending is, frankly, they drop the ball big time, and it's kind of a crap ending. So that left a little bit of a sour taste in my mouth, but I like the ride, so I sort of recommend it. My brother and I have a few that we're going to catch later on that I don't know a lot about. One is called Housebound. And I think it's like a comedy horror flick. So it's like from New Zealand. They seem to be doing all the comedy horror about a girl under house arrest in what may be a haunted house.
Okay, all right.
Then there's one called We Are Still Here. It seems to be hitting high on Rotten Tomatoes, and I think is also something of a haunted house thing, but I don't know a ton about that one, other than I remember liking the trailer for it. And then lastly, this movie called The Hive. You know anything about that, Nick?
No, it doesn't ring a bell.
Check the trailer for it. It looked interesting. The quote from Ain't It Cool News on that one said, Evil Dead meets Memento. but it sort of looked a little more pop horror, but in kind of a good way. Like, it looked sort of fun. Sort of maybe the Scream Cabin in the Woods crowd. Anyway, that is it for my rundown.
Nick, you got anything particular?
I'm just going to mention, it's not a movie, it's a podcast. It's called Limetown. It's sort of about a town that sort of is deserted overnight. There's a little bit of a lost kind of vibe to it, but it's told in a This American Lifestyle.
I've heard of this, yeah.
It is really good. It's only a few episodes in.
I believe it's meant to be like a 7-episode
Yeah, it's a finite series, but I'm really, really enjoying it. And it's kind of got a creepy edge to it, so...
Right. I reckon who's ever heard This American Life episodes that veer a little creepier, like there's that one about the old house or whatever, the derelict house the kid found. It was a true story. This is told in that style.
Yeah, I mean, it's a fictional story, but...
But you know that This American Life can actually be kind of creepy at times when they deal in with the more serious stuff, so...
But, yeah, that was all I got.
All right, cool. Well, we'll be back next week, and until next time...
Yo-jo!
And that'll wrap it up for us this week. As always, you can drop us email with topic suggestions, things you want us to hear about, or just comments on the podcast at roguesgallerytx@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter at roguesgallery. Check us out on Facebook. Check out our website at www.roguesgallerytx.com. Check us out on Instagram at roguesgallerytx. And if you want to help us out, go over to iTunes and give us a 5-star rating and a little review. We'd very much appreciate it. And we will be back next week.